At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Iran is more than Persia. A new book from Professor Brenda Schaefer of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Ethnic Politics in Iran. Iran is a bad actor, part of the Axis that is now attacking Ukraine. However, Iran is a state that emerges from the 20th century here in the 21st century with much paradox. And Professor Schaefer's book introduces us to some aspects of those paradoxes. Brenda, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. Persianness and the Farsi language are presumed this far away from Iran to be the language of the whole country and the culture of the whole country. Your book makes it very quickly obvious that that is not the case, that the Persianness is perhaps 50%, but the languages are as United Nations as we could ask. The ethnic minorities, each of them have distinct profiles. They come from far away. Some have different religions than Shia. Some have the religions of the area. All of this is in play all the time in Iran. So I want to begin with the largest of the ethnic minorities, the Azerbaijanis, the Azeris. They are associated with the northwest of Iran. Who are the Azerbaijani Iranians today, and how do they think of themselves? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. You know, we use the terms Iran and Persia interchangeably for a couple hundred years. But actually, as you said correctly, Iran is something very different than just the Persian group. That would be like calling the British English or calling all the Soviets Russians. And, when the Soviet Union broke up, we discovered it was a whole mosaic of peoples and peoples with different aspirations. But actually, you started asking about the Azerbaijani Turks in Iran. Up until the 20th century, Iran was always a Turco-Iranian empire, with the political leadership for the last couple hundred years being Turkic dynasties, Azerbaijani dynasties, and sort of the cultural elite being a Persian, and had these two elements in it. With the 20th century, this changed, and with the Pahlavi regime, the two Shahs, father and son, and then continued under the Islamic Republic, Persian language, Persian people were put, to the forefront with a dominant position, and all the minorities were supposed to, give up their native cultures, that weren't allowed to study their languages in school, not to use them in government and, in any sort of formal situation. And so what had been a Turco-Iranian empire, turned into a Persian state. And definitely the Azerbaijanis are the biggest question about the stability of the regime or the character of the state going forward, because, many minority groups, especially the Kurds, the Ahwazi Arabs, the Baluch, have never really been subdued by Tehran under the Islamic Republic. The Azerbaijanis were, after the 1979, December 79 uprising in Tabriz, they were somewhat considered, reliable or, somewhat subdued. And it's a very big question, because not only is this the largest minority, but they're also, relatively to the other groups, they're relatively wealthy. They have some positions of power in the regime. And also there's the support from outside of the Republic of Azerbaijan and Turkey that in recent months have really taken a bigger interest in the status of this group in Iran.
There are 31 provinces in Iran, and some of them have the names of the ethnic minorities that are associated with those provinces, although not all. You've mentioned the Ahwazi, who are called Arabs by the Persians in Tehran. You mentioned the Kurds, who are spread over several states, because this is the cutting up of the Ottoman Empire that didn't ask about tribal loyalties. There are groups, though, that are fresh to me, Brenda. The Caspianites, who are they, and how are they distinct from the Persians?
Right. So around the Caspian Sea, there are several major ethnic groups. The biggest is the Gilaks, second is Mazanis. You also have Turkmen that live near the Caspian Sea. And the two first groups that are in Gilan and Mazaran province, Persians refer to them as the Northernites. They refer to themselves as Caspianites. And it's very interesting. Like, for instance, even when the soccer teams of these provinces meet, they emphasize their language. They hold up ethnic flags. There's a lot of solidarity between these two groups. And they had an uprising. They didn't accept the Islamic Republic. They fought against it in 79. But after being subdued, they were pretty much... You really didn't hear from them in terms of anti-regime activity. And in fact, in the last version of the CIA fact book, when they analyze ethnic minorities, they don't even mention them anymore. They just kind of consider them, move their numbers over to the Persian ledger. But we're seeing now in this current anti-regime wave, it's very fierce in Gilan and Mazaran, and also Turkmen have joined, which means it's another exceptional aspect of this round of anti-regime protests, that it's, you know, spreading to groups that had really been pacified for most of the period of the Islamic Republic.
The Baloch have a prominent role in Pakistan, but the Baloch in southeastern Iran have been resentful of the Iran regime for some time. I recall during the presidency of the extremely disordered Ahmadinejad, I believe there was an attempt on his life or an attempt on his caravan, and some of his security forces were killed. So the Baloch strike me as not in any way domesticated. They have their own language, they have their own association, and they associate with the Baloch across the border, which strikes me as the fact you make most important. The breakup of the Soviet Union empowered these ethnic minorities who were contiguous with their co-patriots, co-religionists, co-ethnicists across the border. Is that generally understood in Tehran, that the exit of the Soviet Union did not favor Tehran?
So, yeah, the Baloch are, I mean, I think that's part of Iran, the Sistan Baluchistan area that the Tehran never really fully conquered. And as you mentioned, this motorcade of Ahmadinejad that was going in the area and that was attacked, and several people in the security people were killed. Through the whole period of the Islamic Republic, it's been a story of soldiers and IRGC being killed there, and really, you know, sort of the regime doesn't manage to fully rule that place. The last Friday of September, as people, Baloch, were leaving a mosque in the city of Zayedan, they were brutally massacred by regime representatives, the security forces that organized a massacre because they wore local clothes to try to fit in. I mean, there's pictures after where you see them on rooftop with guns, but wearing the local clothes, which they wore in order to try to get into the area.
That's September 2022. So the violence of many years ago continues against the Baloch.
Right. So in this massacre, about 80 people were killed, people that were in the mosque, a lot of children. But about 2 weeks after that, the two IRGC members that were responsible for this operation were having breakfast and were shot. And this is part of a larger phenomenon of the minorities right now, where they're targeting in the provinces, they're targeting people that are massacring their people. This couldn't happen in Tehran. It's too big. People don't know where different policemen live, IRGC live. But in the provinces, this is possible. These people are local. So there's an issue of, you know, they're really targeted assassinations as part of this anti-regime wave. Your point about the co-ethnics, it's extremely important because of the fact that about half of Iran's population has co-ethnic ties in neighboring states. This affects everything. It affects the strength and logistic ability of the different ethnic groups. It affects the regime's foreign policy. I mean, take Iran's foreign policy from the beginning of the breakup. here the Soviet Union breaks up, and among the new countries, there's a state, Republic of Azerbaijan, with a Shia majority. You would think, you know, for Iran, this would be hallelujah. Here, another Shia country. I can export Islam. But from day one, on the day of the Soviet breakup, there was a, you know, the front page of Tehran Times on how dangerous the independence of Turkmenistan and the Republic of Azerbaijan is for Iran, because, you know, this hand will be coming over the border and instigating our ethnic minority. So I think from day one, I mean, if you try to understand how is it that the Islamic Republic, that so-called stands up for Muslims, supported Armenia's occupation of 20% of Azerbaijan's territories, eviction of a million people from Shia from their homes. And the only way to understand it is this ethnic issue. They wanted Azerbaijan weak and not attractive, so it couldn't be, you know, attractive for its own ethnic minorities.
Let's go to the beginning of the Islamic Republic of Iran, 1979, when we come back. Iran is more than Persia. Ethnic Politics in Iran, Brenda Schaefer of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, the author. I'm John Batchelor.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contract. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer. First 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.